Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF, Donnelly Stewart Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.
Live from Liverpool, The Dark Paranormal, Season 17.
Hello everyone and welcome back to The Dark Paranormal, Season 17, Episode 7. That's right, after today, we only have 3 more episodes of this season left. And then, of course, we will take our break, and then we're back for season 18. So now is the time to send your paranormal experiences over to contact@thedarkparanormal.com. Now, thankfully, over time, and completely unintentionally, the Dark Paranormal seems to have become a place for people to feel safe in sharing their paranormal experiences. And I mean that from the feedback I get from people who submit their experiences. They state they feel secure sending it to this show. And it's a very strange thing. I can only put it down to the warmness of the listenership itself. Regardless of what you believe in terms of the paranormal, just for 30, 40 minutes, sit there, listen to somebody else's true experience, and imagine to yourself, if that happened to me, how would I feel? Suspend that disbelief. Put yourself in that place of discomfort. And then, of course, go back to whatever belief system you believe in. But I think when you do so, you will have a newfound respect for the person who submitted their experience. Because whether you believe it took place or not, they believe it took place to them. Therefore, that discomfort you felt, that will only be a minuscule percentage of what that person went through themselves. And that's why, as we've evolved as a show, we're accepting submissions of any length. Because we do want your experiences to be heard. That's the only way we will ever have any semblance of acceptance of what people are truly going through when encountering something dark and paranormal. So, regardless of the length of your paranormal experience, please send it over to contact@thedarkparanormal.com. And what we'll do is make sure that it goes in front of listeners' ears, simply because we can place it if it's short, either on our Patreon Dark Bites episodes, or if it's mid-length, a mini-sode, or if it's at least 6 one-sides of A4 paper, around 3,500 words, it may make the main show for Season 18. And the submissions for Season 18 are already rolling in, so don't hesitate to get yours in now. Again, it's contact@thedarkparanormal.com. Today's experience is one of those that I really enjoy receiving. because it's come via the daughter of somebody who is of the age where they don't really want to go about saying they believe in the paranormal, let alone have had experiences with the paranormal, or in this case, seem to be able to sense the paranormal and see the paranormal world around them. However, the listener who submitted today's experience managed to finally get their father's permission to share their experiences on their behalf in the first person, on the sole proviso that the daughter changes any names of the people involved. Now, you'll often hear me talk about what I call authenticators, or certain things which I think make certain experiences seem more valid than others. And 9 times out of 10, for me, that comes down to the nuances within the language that's used. And today's experience, for me, is full of authenticators. But of course, before we begin today's episode, I need to say a huge, massive thank you to our wonderful team over on Patreon. When you decide to join our team over on Patreon, not only do you receive everything on this main feed, both ad-free and before anyone else, but you can also gain full access to the entire back catalogue of our weekly podcast for Patreons, Dark Bites. Dark Bites releases each and every week of the year, even between seasons, and there's over 70 plus hours worth of Patreon-only content for you to go and binge. We have built a wonderful community of like-minded paranormal enthusiasts over on Patreon, and we'd love to extend an exclusive invitation just for you. Simply head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal, just like the following wonderful new team members have: Mary Malcolm Sanders, Meg, Tash, AJ Jackson, Ricardo Verdin, Fireblade, Amy Rogers, Jane T, John Titan, T-Rex, Linda Garland, Sifa 34, Eleanor Roberts, Angus McGilligan, Rachel Pace Davis, Maria Goralichik, Trevor, Katana Sataro, Rebecca Hochstad, Sharon Rosas, Lisa Hunter, Trevor and Catlin. Thank you so much for supporting the show, guys. It genuinely means the world to me, and it allows the show to keep going. I hope you enjoy all the early ad-free releases and, of course, the entire back catalogue of Dark Bites and a new episode every week. And if that sounds like your thing, head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. But right now, it's time to lower those lights. Make yourself comfortable, and most importantly, leave your disbelief at the door. As we hear all about the restless dead. The more I've listened to submitters' stories, the surer I am that my father has experienced paranormal activity all through his life, and, in my opinion, is likely a medium. He doesn't like to talk about his experiences often, because they genuinely frighten him, but he has given his permission for me to write them down on the basis I anonymise the names and places, which I of course agreed with. So these are my father's experiences. I'd love to hear what you or your listeners think, and if you think, as I do, that he may be a medium. The following is all from my father's perspective. The first time that I saw what I think was a ghost was in 1974. I was 9 years old. I was at my grandfather's wake, and it was in spring, which is still cold in upstate New York. My family was very Catholic, so naturally we were having an open casket wake, and we were lining up in front of Grandpa's casket all to say our last goodbye. When I was about 10 feet away from him, I noticed a figure of a man standing in the corner of the room, and I was fixated on him. He stood out because he wasn't wearing a black suit like everyone else in the room. This figure was wearing a grey shirt and slacks that looked rather familiar. As my eyes panned up to his face, I needed to do a double take, because that figure was my grandfather. And he seemed calm. He was just lazily looking around the room, as if doing a light mental note of who had shown up and who hadn't. Questions quickly ran through my mind. Well, maybe the hospital made a mistake. Maybe the heart attack wasn't that bad. Maybe he was actually alive and just wanted to get out of the tuxedo the funeral home had placed him in. But as my eyes quickly dashed back to the casket, my blood ran cold. And it wasn't because of a draft coming from the chilly March air. It was because my grandfather was in two places at once. He was in the casket, as pale and as still as someone could be. Yet he was also in the corner of the room, in the clothes he wore the most, casually leaning against the wall. I tugged at my mum's arm in front of me. She turned around. "What is it, Jack?" "Mum, Grandpa's standing in the corner, but he's also in the casket. Do you see him?" My mum's eyes, red and puffy from crying, narrowed. "That's not funny. Today is not the day for pranks, Jack." "It's not a prank," I protested. "Look, over there in the corner, the front of the room. Don't you see him too?" My mum sighed and turned to look at the corner to indulge me. Sure enough, I still saw Grandpa stood there. This time, I locked eyes with him. But now they were cold and hard, and he slowly shook his head, like he was giving me a warning to back off. I shivered again as Mum turned back to me. This time she had a lighter tone when speaking to me. "Honey, there's nobody there. I know you miss Grandpa. I miss him too. We're grieving, and sometimes our minds play tricks with us, especially when we're sad. But he's in heaven now, and we're all here to say goodbye." I just stared at her, dumbfounded. Until she turned away to accept condolences from newly arriving guests. How did she not see him? How could nobody here see him? He was completely solid, looking just like he did in life, not ghost-like at all. I froze as I thought of the word ghost, and a new eerie feeling crept over me. Now I was scared to look again at Grandpa in the corner, and as the line inched me ever closer to the casket, I could still feel his eyes on me. Grandpa hadn't stopped looking at me since we locked eyes. His oppressive stare got worse and worse until I finally reached the front of the line, and I'm looking down at the Grandpa in the casket. I placed my hand gently over his crossed hands that were holding the rosary, and I dipped my head in prayer, like everyone else had before me. Just as I closed my eyes, though, I felt a breath on the back of my neck, one that made every hair on my body stand up. And it smelt faintly of the mints that Grandpa always liked to suck on before heading out of the house. I squinted my eyes open and quickly flitted them over to the corner where Grandpa had been standing. Now it's completely empty, and my heart dropped to my stomach. I felt the presence looming over me, almost pushing against my back, the breaths still coming hot on my neck. I couldn't move. I was frozen with fear. What finally broke me from my vigil was the hand on my shoulder. When it grabbed me, it felt like all of my muscles received a jolt of electricity. I just turned and ran out of the room. To this day, I still don't know if it was Grandpa grabbing my shoulder or someone simply behind me in the line, telling me subtly to move on. Later that year, 9 months after Grandpa was in the ground, I saw him one more time. This time, in our house. He and Grandma had been living with us for the past few years, so my mum and dad could more easily take care of them in their old age. The house was a typical 50s split-level home, and the room I'd been sharing with my brother was at the very end of the hall, overlooking the hallway and down the short staircase to the living room on the opposite end of the house. This was very early on Christmas morning, probably around 5 a.m. And I woke up because I heard loud footsteps coming from the dining room, which was adjacent to the living room. I sincerely hoped it was Santa Claus dropping off our presents. Or maybe it was Mum getting the table ready for Christmas dinner, although she was usually never up at that time. Besides, it was still pitch black outside, and there was no light coming through the slit under my bedroom door. I carefully rolled out of bed so as not to wake my brother, and I slowly opened the door to peek down the hallway. The Christmas tree was just out of my line of sight, but I could see faint shadows along the wall from the dim lights of the tree. And sure enough, I heard more rustling sounds from the dining room. "Please be Santa," I whispered shakily under my breath. Just then, a shadow emerged from the dining room. It was Grandpa. I just knew, based on the way he was just hunched over and shuffling across the floor. A cold shiver went down my spine, just like at the funeral when I first saw him. He walked slowly towards the living room, toward the tree. He quickly was out of my line of sight because of the narrow hallway view, but he must have been next to the Christmas tree by now, if he continued on that path. I was so still, again frozen in fear. My heart was pounding, my breaths shallow, and they were the only things I could hear. No more rustling sounds from Grandpa's steps. Did he disappear? I was tempted to go down the hallway to the top of the stairs, peer out over into the living room, but my feet would not move. They were planted in the bedroom doorway. I stood there for a few more moments, working up the courage to check downstairs. Maybe I imagined Grandpa. Maybe I was having some weird realistic dream. But suddenly, there were loud crashes in the living room, right from where the Christmas tree was standing. The abrupt noise got me moving and I ran to the end of the hallway. No one was in the living room, but several ornaments had fallen to the floor. The noise had also woken up my parents, who stumbled hurriedly out of their bedroom. "Jack," my mum said incredulously, "what was that noise? What have you done?" "Nothing," I protested. "I was wondering what the noise was too." My dad pushed past us to turn on the light and take a closer look. "How were you already out here though?" he asked. I thought I heard something," I stuttered. Now that the lights were on, we could all get a fuller scope of the damage. Almost half of the ornaments from the tree had shattered on the floor. It was like someone had grabbed hold of the tree and violently shaken it. My mum cried out in despair, "My ornaments! They're ruined!" You see, a lot of these ornaments had been heirlooms, passed down from generation to generation, many of them from Austria, where my dad and grandparents had emigrated from. My dad looked very upset too. "It's all right, Mary. We'll clean up the mess and we'll find a way to replace them." He was trying to find the words to placate her, but she was already in tears, kneeling on the floor over the mess. The gifts Santa had presumably left were just a bit further under the tree. My parents sent me back to my room shortly after that, still suspicious of me, despite my protests. Christmas of 1972 had effectively been ruined before the sun had even risen. And even though Grandpa had been dead since March, I was sure he was to blame. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns make it easy to start automatically saving and investing for you, for your kids, and your retirement. If you're anything like me, you would have believed you need a degree or you need some expert knowledge and a load of money before you invest, but it's just not true. You don't need a lot of money or expertise to invest with Acorns. In fact, you can get started with your spare change. Acorns recommend an expert-built portfolio that fits you and your money goals. They then automatically invest your money for you. And now Acorns is putting their money into your future. Open an Acorns Later IRA and get up to a 3% match on new contributions. And that's extra money for your retirement. Acorns has allowed me to look back at my past at times when I've thought, investment isn't for people like me. And although now I'm a huge fan of Acorns, I just wish they existed 25 years ago when I first started earning money. Because by having the wrong perception that investment isn't for people like me, I've not given my money the chance to grow. But that's something, even at this point in life, I'm going to make right. So why don't you head over to acorns.com/darkparanormal or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today. Paid non-client endorsements. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Investment involves risk. Acorns Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/darkparanormal.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Americans are durable. We take pride in hard work and high quality. American Giant makes durable quality clothing right here in the USA because what we wear reflects who we are. When you buy American Giant, you're not just wearing the best clothes money can buy. You're helping keep jobs and pride in your own backyard. Premium clothing built to last decades, like it should. Get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code RIGHTHERE24.
Years later, I asked my mom more about Grandpa and what he was like. She said she loved him, but she said he could also be very strict, even cruel at times. She said he would punish her and her sisters quite severely for even minor infractions, if one of them came home past curfew from a date, for example. He'd have them kneel for hours on sandpaper. Grandpa would also use his belt frequently on them. I've not seen him again since that Christmas morning over 50 years ago. And I do hope it stays that way, but I do wonder if his cruel streak carried on with him after his death, more so than the good parts about him. The next major paranormal experience I had was when I was in my early 20s, in the late 80s. It was actually my friend Danny's paranormal experience because it occurred in his house, but I experienced part of it with him. Danny and I had been volunteer firefighters in our town since we turned 18. Recently, he hadn't been helping out as much, because he'd just got married to his wife, Megan, and they were busy settling into the house they'd just bought together. One particular night, when I was on duty at the fire station and Danny was not, we got a call for a house fire, and I immediately recognised the address as Danny's. We rushed over to his house to find the living room full of smoke. The fire wasn't too large and we were able to quickly put it out, without much structural damage to the house. We determined the cause to be from a lit candle, which was left near a coffee table. Thankfully, Danny and Megan had been out on a date, and when they rushed back home hearing the news, Danny ran up to me, breathless. "Danny," I said, "what were you thinking? Leaving a candle on when you're not home. Come on, Danny, that's one of the first things we know not to do as firefighters." "Jack," he started. His eyes were wild, as if he couldn't believe what had happened. It wasn't us. I never leave candles lit when we leave. You know that. You have to believe me. I was skeptical. Then who was it? I asked. Danny hesitated, and finally he said, Hear me out. We think our house is haunted. We've been experiencing weird things ever since we moved in. Like things moving on the mantelpiece by themselves, or indents in the bed as if someone sat there. We've even started putting cameras up in rooms to prove it, and I can show you the footage. He caught my attention. Though I hadn't seen a ghost since my grandpa all those years ago, I certainly was inclined to believe Danny. Okay then, show me the footage. The next morning, I came by their house to see the video footage from the previous night. He and Megan looked very shaken up. Even as I crossed the threshold into their home, I got a heavy and oppressive feeling in my chest, finding it harder to breathe. I immediately got a sense I was not welcome. By something I couldn't make out. Come see, Danny said. We began watching the film around 8:30. The camera had been in the corner of the living room with a full view of the empty room. Suddenly, the candle on the coffee table lit by itself. That all-too-familiar cold shiver went down my spine once more. Over the course of the next hour, as we watched, the candle appeared to slowly move closer and closer to the edge of the table, as if something was nudging it further and further until it finally fell over and caught the rug on fire. Strangely enough, every time the candle moved, the film footage became staticky, like something was messing with the energy around the camera, or even something invisible was stood in front of it. We don't know what to do, Danny said. This paranormal activity seems to be getting worse and worse as time goes on. And now this thing is acting like it wants to kill us. Maybe there's a way to get rid of it, like hiring a priest or exorcising it or something, I suggested. Danny nodded, as if it was a good idea to try. Yeah, we could look into that, he said, somewhat resigned. We're scared though, Jack. We might just try and move. We spent all our savings on this house. I told him and Megan to keep me posted, but I hadn't heard much from them over the following months. Apparently, they looked into calling a priest to come out to try and exorcise whatever was there, but I never knew what became of that, because 6 months after the house fire, Danny was in a bar with some friends, and he went to stand up and dropped dead. It was so sudden. The doctors said it was a brain aneurysm that burst and killed him instantly, even though he was a healthy 23-year-old. I was completely shocked. Mostly, I felt awful for Megan. I got to speak with her the next week at the funeral, and she was beside herself with grief. She pulled me aside at one point, tears streaming down her face. She gripped my arm and her eyes drilled into mine. Jack, I just know that thing killed him. How? I asked. The doctors said it was an aneurysm. She waved her hand as if to say that was impossible. You want to know how I know? Because the second he died, all the activity in the house stopped. It's like that thing got what it wanted and left. The house is totally normal now. She burst into more tears as I was left speechless, trying to console my friend's widow, but not really knowing how. I never saw Megan after Danny's funeral. I think she moved back in with her parents because their house was quickly sold off. I sincerely hope wherever she is now, she's doing okay. About 10 years after these events, I'd just moved in with my then fiance, now wife, Christy. We met when we were both interns at the law firm we worked at a few years before. This was the summer of 98. And one night, I woke up because I heard giggling in our bedroom. I looked around and I saw Christy was still fast asleep, which made me freeze up because the giggling continued, distinctly coming from the other side of the room. I turned slowly to see a figure stood in the corner, and as my eyes adjusted to the faint window light seeping into the room, I recognised the figure as my grandmother. My blood turned cold, though, because Grandma had died 8 years before. And just like her husband had looked all those years ago at his funeral, Grandma looked as though she did in real life. Not like a spirit at all. We locked eyes. She laughed even more. I couldn't believe Christy was still asleep. Unless I was dreaming, which could have been a very real possibility. Finally, after Grandma finished this laughing fit, she spoke. "Get ready, Jack. You're only going to have girls." "What?" I asked, confused. But then she just resumed laughing again, and when I blinked, she was gone. The room silent. I tried to shake it off as a strange dream, but a few weeks after that incident, Christy shared the news that we were pregnant. I was elated, and we decided that she was far enough along that we could learn the gender of our baby from the doctor. I was 100% certain now, though, it would be a girl. And sure enough, all these years later, every one of my children, Christy and I had together, are daughters. As if my grandmother's ghost foretold some kind of prophecy that came true. Don't get me wrong, though, I'm very proud to be a hashtag girl dad. My grandma came to visit me once more in 2006, and this time it was to save my life. I was commuting home from work one evening, and as I stepped off the train, everything started to feel different. It's hard to explain, but it was a calmness I've never had before. Colours were brighter. Everything felt gentle, quiet. Even the birds sung more softly. This feeling of calm got more and more intense, even as I drove home from the station. About halfway through the drive, I heard my grandma's voice right next to me in the passenger seat. "Ease off the gas a bit," she said gently. I looked over to my right, and there she is, sat right next to me, seeming as if she was there in the flesh. I listened to her and took my foot off the gas. I was beginning to go down a hill, so still gaining some speed, but the drive was now extremely peaceful. After a little bit, Grandma changed her instructions to now start pressing the brake. I pressed the brake lightly at first, and she repeated herself more urgently. By the time I rolled to the end of the hill, I was about to enter a three-way intersection that was in the shape of a triangle and required all motorists to yield before entering. My car was basically at a stop by the time I rolled up, when suddenly a car ploughed right through that intersection, easily going 20 miles over the speed limit, not even slowing down. At that same moment, the feeling of calmness that had been all over me dissipated. I snapped back to attention, as if for the last 15 minutes I'd been in some sort of deep daydream. It occurred to me then, if I hadn't received those instructions from Grandma, I would have already been in the intersection by the time that driver sped through. I knew in that moment that the would-be crash would have killed me. "Grandma," I breathed, my heart pounding, "you saved me." But when I turned to look at her, she was gone. I was extra thankful that night to return to my family alive and unharmed. A year later, in 2007, Christy and the kids and I travelled to Fredericksburg, Virginia, to visit Christy's college friend, Bethany, for a few days. Bethany lived in a beautiful two-story farmhouse, originally built in the 1800s, with later editions in the 1920s and 1960s. Apparently, I snore very loudly. So when we were determining sleeping patterns, Christy opted to sleep with the kids in one room, and I was left to sleep alone on the other side of the house, which just so happened to be the oldest part of the house. Even as I was putting my suitcases in the room, I could feel as though something else was in that room with me. The air felt charged, heavy. I was sincerely hoping it passed by the time night fell. Of course, I wasn't so lucky. I managed to fall asleep easily enough, but in the middle of the night, I woke suddenly when I felt the edge of the bed sink by my feet, as if someone had just sat down. I choked back a scream when I saw five people in the room with me, one of them sitting on the edge of my bed. They were all in antebellum or Civil War era clothing, with the women wearing those big dresses and at least one of the men wearing grey Confederate uniforms. I was the most scared I'd ever felt, and I couldn't make myself move a single muscle out of sheer terror. The ghosts were just casually talking and laughing amongst themselves, as if it was the most normal thing in the world to do, to chit-chat, whilst also scaring the living hell out of the guy trying to get some sleep. They definitely knew I was there, though, because at one moment they even tried to talk to me. But I was simply too dumbfounded to speak. It was one of the Confederate soldiers who came up to me. He had a younger face and a long, thin moustache. "I'm Richard," he said. "We know you can see us. I have a message I'd like you to pass on to..." Well, I never heard him finish. His directness gave me enough courage to get out of bed and sprint from that room as fast as humanly possible. I barely remember grabbing the car keys, and the next thing I know, I'm speeding down the driveway in our family's Windstar minivan, and trying to get as far away from that house as I could. Even after all these years, I do regret leaving my wife and kids behind in that haunted home. But somehow, deep down, I knew these spirits would not venture further than beyond the eldest part of the house. And I knew my family was sleeping in the newest 1960s part. I also knew that I never felt so terrified in my whole life. And I needed to get out of there before I had a heart attack. After about 20 minutes of driving, I settled on a 7-Eleven parking lot and decided to sleep in the car for the rest of the night. When I woke up a few hours later, the sun was fully risen, and I worked up the courage to drive back to Bethany's. When I drove up, Christy ran out of the front door, asking where I'd been all morning. She'd been very worried, because I would usually leave a note. "Christy, I'll tell you more later, but I'm not going in that house again. I'll stay out here, or I'll drive you round town. You and the kids can stay here if you want." "You're embarrassing me in front of my friend," she responded, pointedly and through gritted teeth. "Just come back in and have some breakfast." "I'm sorry, but no," I said. "I saw something last night, and it genuinely terrified me. I'll stay at the hotel for the rest of the trip." But we ended up compromising. I stayed at the hotel for two more nights, and I picked up my family from Bethany's house 2 days before the trip was meant to end. No doubt Bethany probably thought I was a nutcase. I didn't care, since I still couldn't stop shaking with fear whenever I thought of those Civil War-era ghosts in that farmhouse in Fredericksburg. Nearly 15 years after the event, in 2021, I was up late catching up on work, with the History Channel running on the TV in the background. It was a special about the Civil War battles, but I was only half listening. But when the Battle of Fredericksburg was mentioned, I perked up and watched. The show was discussing soldiers from that battle, and a picture of one soldier flashed on the screen that sent a chill down my spine. I knew that face. It was Richard, the ghost that was trying to have me send a message to someone. His full name was Richard Roland Kirkland. He allegedly gave water and blankets to wounded Union soldiers on the battlefield and managed not to get shot. He died in battle about a year later in Georgia. He also has a Wikipedia page where I got some of that information. But a lot of my old fear bubbled to the surface again when I saw the exact same face after all these years, even if it was just on a screen. These are just some of the major paranormal experiences that I've had. There are many more. But a lot of them are more trivial, just because they happen so often. I've realised that since I was little, I see shadow people, I hear voices constantly. I just always try to tune them out, because genuinely, they scare me. The voices are from people who are in a room 1 second, but when I turn back, they're gone. They ask me to do things for them, or like Richard, to pass a message on, potentially to loved ones. I never listen. I actively ignore them. I'm just too scared. I don't want this ability, or whatever some may call it. My daughters tell me it's more of a gift that I can use, or that I could be the next Long Island medium, ha ha. But I don't want any of that. If I am truly a medium, I see it more as a curse, one that I'd like to shake off. Maybe it's genetic, but as far as I know, I'm the only one in my family who has this ability. Since we're all just made of energy, I guess it can't all just disappear when we die, right? Maybe it just gets transferred to a different frequency, or maybe I can just tune into those frequencies, like a radio to communicate with those who've passed. Maybe I'm just crazy, though, which I've never officially ruled out either. And that is how the write-up for the anonymous submitter's experiences end. So what do we think, guys? I think this gentleman certainly sounds like a medium to me. And I know we often use the term curse or gift when talking about the ability to speak to the dead. But I guess anything in life can be viewed as a curse or a gift, dependent on if you want it or you don't. And I think we've all received a gift that we've looked at and thought, I never wanted that. But I think I'd sooner have 100 of them compared to having dead people come around and chat to me when they choose. Well, that wraps up episode 7 for season 17. For our Patreons, I'll speak to you again on Sunday for a great episode of Dark Bites. For everyone else, I'll see you on Monday for our final Halloween edition of a minisode. And until then, stay safe, take care, and remember, when you're discussing the paranormal, always try and leave some of your disbelief at the door. And I'll see you next time, right here, on The Dark Paranormal.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hold up.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the reproductive rights amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.